Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, noise heads, and welcome to Surface Noise, Modern Superior's vinyl and music podcast. As always, I'm one half of your hosting team, Richard Feliciano.
Yeah.
I'm joined across borders.
Yes. Although I was on your side of the border for a while, but now I'm back on the other side of the border.
Mr. Dan Gorman. So, Dan, you're from Canada. You're visiting the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to get a taste of everything America has to offer. You got some Disney.
Universal. Shake Shack.
Shake Shack. Oh, okay. I still haven't gone to Shake Shack.
Oh, I got one up on you then.
Another thing I haven't experienced is narrowly escaping a hurricane.
Yeah. We got out just in time. We were in Orlando, and while we were on our trip, it was kind of like people started texting us, like, hope you're okay, and all this stuff. So we started to kind of look into the news, and we saw that it was coming, and we got out just in time. It was starting to get a little bit like, you know, is the plane going to be able to take off and stuff like that, like it with the weather, but it ended up being a smoother flight out than it was on the way in. So, hey, there you go.
Well, I'm glad you're safe. I'm glad you enjoyed your time here.
Yes.
I'm sure you're glad to be back home.
Totally. And excited for this episode because we had this one in the bank for a while. We've been ruminating on it.
Yeah, we've had this one in the plans. It's gotten pushed back a little bit. Good reasons to push it back. We talked to some cool people. We talked to Rebecca Johnson from the Netflix show Glow.
And you just put up a bonus kind of episode about The National, which is awesome.
Yeah, my wife and I stayed up late after watching the movie It to talk about their new record, Sleep Well Beast. We had someone on Reddit commented that my wife and I should have been given 12 cups of coffee before we recorded this show.
I think that's like a thing that people generally think about, like me as well. I think we both, and I guess from the sounds of it, you and your wife, I think all three of us seem to have a little bit more of a drier kind of discussion type on these episodes.
Totally.
So, and maybe the listener should drink the coffee.
Exactly.
And then they'll think that we're talking faster.
Put down your devices and learn to have a attention span.
Yeah, enjoy the seconds that, you know, we take a breather between our discussion.
Yeah, we can't all be like super animated hosts. Yeah. You know, it'd be boring if everyone was just very animated and knew how to keep energy going.
Yeah.
I have to exhale after spending that much energy on one sentence. So we're very excited for this episode. In case you haven't seen the title for it, this episode is called Life After the Buzz Bin.
Is the buzz bin a specific term, an American term?
It is an American term, Dan. I don't know if you came across any old newspapers while you're in America, but in the 1990s, music television, also known as MTV, used to have a category of music video that they slapped with the Buzz Bin label. So when Better Than Ezra released a new music video, or the Presidents of the United States of America, or Beck, there'd be like a little fake, like in the beginning of the movie trailer, they have like the grade of the movie, rated R, the rating. You would have that, yeah. And it would say rated B for Buzz Bin.
Was it specifically called Buzz Bin because it was like, these are up and comers, or was it like they just certain bands got tagged with it? Or was it specifically because like, oh, people are buzzing about this band?
It was when 90s alt rock was kind of a new thing that was taking over the radio. So I believe Hootie and the Blowfish were probably at one point in the buzz. There was this weird time in the 90s where you could be like Vertical Horizon, or you could be Sister Hazel, or you could be Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, no.
And it all felt like everyone just labeled that as alt rock, alternative.
Yeah. That's so weird in hindsight.
It's like Bare Naked Ladies and the Eels and Bush and Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
Aren't the same genre.
That's a very disparate collection of bands.
But it was just all considered one thing, and they labeled it the Buzz Bin. I know you didn't have that up there. What was the equivalent for you?
So we had Much Music. I don't think we had it. We had some, like, I know of MTV also having like 120 minutes for like the alternative stuff. We had like some different shows on Much Music. Like we had Going Coastal, which was like their East Coast Canadian indie rock stuff, and West Coast indie rock stuff. And I think we had The Wedge, and The Wedge was like our answer to 120 minutes. It was like, here's the cool, weird indie rock, the alt rock stuff. But we never really had anything like Buzz Bin, like, you know, but we did have like the kind of equivalent of that. So
right on. The second component of the reason why we're bringing up the Buzz Bin is that a lot of the artists that were slapped with this label, whether they were slapped with the Canadian version or the American version, they ended up being one hit wonder bands.
Yeah. And I feel like even Weezer, when Buddy Holly came out, it was kind of like, okay. And again, you said Beck, like people were kind of looking at Beck and saying, okay, Loser was a one hit wonder. You know, and then when his second album was coming out, a lot of people were just like, whatever, until they heard it.
Feel free to comment and, you know, fill in your memories of what the Buzz Bin era was like.
And we will, at the end of the episode, after we talk about our two picks for bands that were one-hit wonders, but maybe didn't deserve to be, or maybe had a longer life span than that, we'll have a bunch of responses that we got when we put stuff out on Facebook. So we will get to some listener submissions.
So, Daniel, I know that before we get to the actual life after the Buzz Bin / life after being a one-hit wonder segment, we do have some titles to go through.
And now it's time for What's Spinning, the Love and Hate Edition.
So my first pick of the episode, preamble album picks, is an artist named Blockhead. He's a producer. He has worked with Aesop Rock in the past, but he's also had a long career of instrumental hip hop records. His real name is Tony Simon, and he just put out a record called Funeral Balloons. On September 8th, so really recently. It's a really cool record. It's all instrumental, it's all beat based music. It's really cool. I listen to it a lot while I'm at work. I find it to be really great mood music, and for a connection to Surface Noise, it was mixed at the Dayliner Manor by Baby Dayliner.
That's right. Blockhead is an old friend and collaborator of Baby Dayliner. Yeah. previous guest here on the podcast.
Yeah, it's a really cool record, and I recommend it. We usually talk more about indie rock stuff. This is a little bit different. It's kind of got like some funky 1970s samples, and it's a bit of a headphone album that's good to just kind of vibe out to, but I'm really, really liking it.
Very cool. Did you listen to Blockhead before we did the Baby Dayliner stuff?
Yes, and I believe when you did that episode, I was Googling around and I saw pictures of like Blockhead wearing a Baby Dayliner shirt and stuff, and I was like, I wonder what that connection is, and I didn't know until when I was looking at this record.
That's awesome. So with that, I'm going to give my first love pick.
Yeah.
It is an EP by a band called Diamond Youth. EP's name is Orange. It was released in 2013 on Top Shelf Records.
Yeah. I think you posted about this online recently, right? Like saying that it was something that you had kind of heard the name of, but then you kind of revisited and fell for.
Yeah, I had skimmed through their records like maybe 2 years ago when their first full length came out. But for whatever reason, I just wasn't in the headspace to really hook into what they were doing. But recently, I've kind of been going through some of Top Shelf's back catalog, and I played this EP, the Orange EP, and immediately, once the vocals kicked in, this stood out. They're from Baltimore, Maryland. What I love most is the guy's voice and also the guitars. They remind me a lot, you know, on theme of this episode, of like 90s rock bands. In that same era where there wasn't quite those definitions between like radio rock or grunge rock, it was just kind of one thing where listening to this 6-song EP, you can hear like bits of guitar work that you could be like, this could maybe be like on like a grungy Bush song, or this could be on an old Weezer track. It's very cool. I definitely recommend people check it out. Their full length that came out 2 years after that is called Nothing Matters, and it's similar. I would start with this EP though, because I think this one I like a little bit more.
Cool. You've been really great on tipping me off to things that I had heard like the name of but never really got into, and I think this falls into that category. I think you did the similar thing with Space Mountain and their album Super Mundane, and you talked about one of their other albums I think as well, Big Sky, and I was like, I've heard of those, but I've never listened to them, and now I love them, so I'm definitely going to check out this for sure, because I know the name, I've just never really, like you mentioned, I just never really like jumped onto it, so I got to try it.
Judging a band by their name, if you hear Diamond Youth, it doesn't sound like
something. Yeah, it sounds like dancey.
Yeah,
it sounds like, maybe they would have toured with the Yeah Yeah Yeahs or something.
I don't want to. I'm about to get negative in a moment, so I want to save it for
That's a bad thing, because I like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, but it just sounds like from a different type of music than what you're describing.
Right on.
But before you get negative, I'm gonna jump in real quick with another EP. I've been listening to this EP that I cannot put down. I just keep coming back to it. It's by a band called Blush. And speaking of band names, it's a band name that has a weird spelling. It's Blush and then another H on the end. So Blush with two H's. They're pretty new. They're from LA, and they just put out this EP in, I want to say, June. And it's a 5-song EP. It's super catchy. Like you were saying with the band you're talking about, it kind of has that, okay, this must be influenced by Weezer in some way. But it's just super poppy, super catchy. And it has me clamoring for a full length from them just because I can't put it down. So Blush's It's Fine EP. Yeah, I think if people like that kind of Roswell Kid, kind of poppy, really punchy indie rock, they'll probably go for this too.
Awesome. I have to check that out.
Yeah, it's great. And then again, speaking of Weezer.
Yeah, it's like a weird thing.
Weezer on this show.
If you say their name three or four times as a reference to newer bands, they appear kind of like Bloody Mary in a bathroom mirror. And much like Bloody Mary, the version of Weezer that appears is frightening.
Yeah.
So my hate pick for this episode is the new single entitled The Beach Boys by Weezer.
Oh. Oh my God. It's such a terrible song.
Why is this happening?
We recently had a mini episode about Weezer's singles. They just put out this this single, Beach Boys. And I was like, hey, I sometimes love Weezer. I love the Beach Boys. Maybe there will be something here for me. And I was wrong.
I'm just like, this is their third single from their upcoming album, Pacific Daydream. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. And I'll tell you exactly why this one is specifically so bad. It sounds like Weezer were like guest stars on some really bad sitcom. And within that sitcom, like one of the characters meets Weezer, like by happenstance. And they're like backstage and they're like, hey, let's all write a song together. If someone had told me that this song was written 2 days on the CBS shooting lot, you know, like as like, we got to give this stupid show a song that sounds somewhat like Weezer.
Yeah.
Let's just write a dumb song called The Beach Boys and the lyrics are stupid and let's not think about it. If someone said that was the origin, I'd understand.
Yeah. And it's again, one of those moments of Weezer, much like some of their other singles recently where I go, okay, let's hear this. And then the song starts and I think, this isn't the worst thing, but I'm going to ignore these lyrics and maybe this verse will lead to a chorus that I like. But in this song in particular, it led the chorus, which I could have overlooked in another song, leads to a chorus with just some of the worst Rivers lyrics. Like he's saying, the chorus is just, turn it up, it's the Beach Boys, singing out in a sweet voice, on a roll like a twist toy, keep cranking them Beach Boys. I don't know what that means, on a roll like a twist toy. And he's saying later, like, the Beach Boys making my eyes moist, hold them up at gunpoint. What are you talking about? This doesn't make any sense. I would have liked it more if he had just made a song with the Beach Boys where, like, every once in a while, the point of the song is that he just kind of like makes a reference to one of their lyrics, you know, like Okkervil River had one of those songs, the Plus Ones or something. And it was kind of built out of exclusively rock and roll like references. And I felt like he could have done that here. And it just would have been like, oh, okay. Like, you know, a lot about the Beach Boys and you're kind of showing off, but whatever. But this is just, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know why he's talking about the Beach Boys in this song. He's talking about it being a hip hop world in one line, and the next one he's talking about the Beach Boys being like a twist toy. It's fucking inane.
I got a message here from our resident Weezer expert, Matt Harbert.
Okay.
This was his take on the song. He said, I think this is better than Mexican Strat, but not by much. Sounds like if you tried to pitch a song lazily late at night and didn't go much further. R.I.P. Weezer.
It's looking rough for Weezer. I mean, they were on a roll with the White Album, and maybe this is going to be a piece of crap and their next one will be better. I don't know. But now we've heard like three or four out of the 10 songs, and it's not looking good.
It's not going to be good. This I did some research, and this album is produced by Butch Walker, who is his own singer-songwriter in his own right. But he's most famous for also producing Weezer's album Ratitude.
Oh, great.
So we know things are in good hands.
Yep. So that's your hate pick.
I'm not going to say anything else. The rest of the show is going to be positive.
Yeah.
I got it all out.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Check out Diamond Youth. Check out Blush. Check out Blockhead. And RIP Weezer.
Speaking of RIP, next up on our main segment, we're going to look at two bands who many may have uttered those words in relation to.
Yeah.
However, they were able to rise from the one-hit wonder / buzzbin grave.
And now, it's time for our main topic, Life After the Buzzbin.
I think that this is interesting, and I think it's an interesting topic because... No, I think it's interesting that if you ask your average music fan, they might say that these two bands were one-hit wonders. But I like the idea of, like, these bands kind of quietly cultivating a discography. And I think that's what both of these bands have done. And I think both of us have picked the band of the two that maybe we prefer. But I think it's going to be interesting to get into it.
So, my pick for one-hit wonder / buzzbin survivor is the band Not a Surf.
Yeah, another Weezer adjacent. We just can't get away from Weezer.
Not a Surf. Most people probably remember Not a Surf as the band that produced the amazing hit 1996 single Popular. You don't remember how that song goes off the top of your head. It is also the song that features talking verses with the chorus. I'm the head of the class. I'm popular. I'm never last picked. I've got a cheerleader chick.
Yeah. It's kind of riding that, like, I think there was a lot of bands in the 90s that were considered one-hit wonders that got slapped with the ironic, like, label, and I think maybe Beck came with that too, where they were sort of like, oh, they're doing an ironic thing. It's like the band Cake. They're doing, they must be all about irony. But when you listen to Popular, which is kind of an ironic takedown of like a type of person, the rest of the album doesn't really follow suit in that kind of a vein. It definitely stands out from the record.
Yes, the album it came off of was named High Low. It was their debut. It was also on the major label Elektra Records. So they started out of the gate with a bit of some expectations as being a band on a major label. And as you said, the rest of the album is pretty straight ahead guitar rock music.
Yeah, it's like that kind of guitar rock that feels like indie rock, but wasn't because it was on a major. It's a lot. I think this record was a bit of a play from Elektra to repeat the Blue Album success, because it's also produced by Rick Ocasek from The Cars, like Weezer's first album. It has 10 songs like Weezer's first album. It kind of has a similar graphic design style and typography style on the record. It just kind of feels like, oh, here's another grunge-esque but melodic band that you'll all love. And it's a good record.
The record is aged surprisingly well. And it's kind of a shame because everything that the band is known for in this one-hit wonder bubble that we're taking a look at is basically on the back of the song Popular, which I think was like a late addition to the track listing. I believe the album was written and they kind of sent them back to kind of play with things a little bit. And I think one of the producers had the idea of just having Matthew Cause, the lead singer, read out of this old book. It was like, I don't know if it was like a high school etiquette book of some sort or a psychology book. And that's what the verses are pulled from. In a way, it's sort of course, the way things always work. The things that you kind of just slap together at the last moment are the things that leave a lasting impact. But the other thing that I think kind of put a highlight on this track in particular is the music video. which was filmed at an actual high school. And it shows Matthew Cause like in front of a class reciting the verses. There's some scenes with like people on the football field practicing.
They also had the lead actress from Welcome to the Dollhouse, Heather Matarazzo, in the video as well. I don't know if it was some kind of a like tie-in. I'm pretty sure they kind of have her looking like her character from that movie. I think it might have just been like, we like this movie and we'll make a reference to it, but she's also in that video as well. I like thinking about these bands a lot. Like, if I heard this song on the radio and then went out and bought the album, would I be disappointed? And I could understand people being disappointed with the rest of the album not being that kind of immediate and that kind of like song, but to me it's like a solid record. Like I kind of got into it a little, like a couple years after it came out. They probably had already released another album by the point I started listening to it, but I was just like, oh, this is more of that kind of driving rock, you know, Weezer-esque kind of stuff, and it's good.
You and I are in agreement there, Dan. This is a good record. I think where things got kind of harried for the band is on their follow-up to High Low, which was also...
Yeah, the dreaded sophomore release.
It had been planned to be released on Elektra Records.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
However, the label was very unhappy with the batch of songs that they had recorded. They felt that there wasn't an air to popular that they could throw on the radio.
Yeah.
So they had the band go back in the studio and record a couple of cover songs. That always works well.
I know, that's a terrible idea. Hey, here's some, we don't like your songs, go record a cover song for your hit. Like, that's not a good idea.
This is so mid-90s when you could have there was that one band that did a cover of an NWA song. Do you remember that? Boys in the
Hood. Oh, Dynamite Hack.
Yep. There was that. It was a time where you could break a band by just having them cover a song that people already like.
Yeah, the Ataris did it later with Boys of Summer.
Yeah, so they were trying to do that with Not a Surf, who they viewed as a liability on that second album, which was called The Proximity Effect. The band actually pushed back on it enough that the label got fed up and just flat out refused to release it. So there was this weird period of maybe like 4 or 5 years where the album was ready, but it hadn't been released across the world. It may have just been like in Europe or something.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think this is another thing that there's like a trend here, because when we talk about the band that I picked, the exact same thing happened to them. First album has a hit, goes back in to record a record, you know, record label's not happy with it, tries to push some, you know, some hits on them. The weird thing about Not a Surf and The Proximity Effect is I did read somewhere that Elektra actually was like, hey, why don't you just put an acoustic version of Popular on this album? And that's so weird. And they tried to do that to the Get Up Kids as well. When they put out their second record, they were like, hey, why don't you just record this one song from your record you've already put out again? And it's like, wouldn't that be weird if your second album just had the big song from your first record? Like, what a weird thing to think.
It's such a different time than it is now. I feel like you, back then, you couldn't listen to albums before you bought them for the most part. So if there was one song like that that even remotely got your interest, I could see a lot of people buying the record.
Yeah. But if that was a song that was already like that was your popular song from your last record, it'd be like, is this a new record?
This was a time when people were buying CD singles, and it was a different world that we live in now. Rightly so, Not a Surf said no to all of it. And for a while, they were in that sort of weird major label purgatory.
Yeah.
Now, Austin, Dan, you said that Super Drag's arc kind of resembles this a little bit. Do you think we should look into the one-hit wonder version of Super Drag?
Should we jump and then maybe jump back and forth, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, let's do it. Who sucked out the feeling? Who sucked out the feeling? The band that I picked is Super Drag, and we'll get back to Nat a Surf a little bit. But their first record was called Regretfully Yours. It came out in 1996. Funnily enough, also on Elektra Records, another trend here. And I think Elektra Records had a bit of a problem with some of their bands. I know that They Might Be Giants were on Elektra for a while as well, and there was some like changing of the guards, and the person that liked They Might Be Giants got moved somewhere else, and then everybody else just said, you're not going to be on our label anymore because we don't know what to do with you. I think they kind of had a problem with this kind of stuff, because Super Drag's record Regretfully Yours came out. It had a hit called Sucked Out. It had a very kind of immediate chorus with the lyrics, who sucked out the feeling. The singer kind of hits this almost like non-high note, and it had that kind of very sing-alongable thing going to it. Played on MTV, was a really big hit. They got classified as a one-hit wonder. Again, like Nat a Surf, it's a record that I can't understand being disappointed with it, because if you heard that song and bought the rest of the record, a lot of people probably at the time thought, oh, it's just more songs that aren't as good as that one. But I think it's another record that has aged really well. And I think they do a really great kind of power pop, you know, thing. They remind me a lot of like Superchunk in that they just picked a kind of style and just stuck with it. But again, they went to do a second record, and that's where things went awry. Before I get into that, though, do you have any feelings on Regretfully Yours or their single, Sucked Out?
I love Sucked Out, and actually, I remember when it was played all over MTV at the time, and there was this weird, like, 10-year gap where I completely forgot the song existed.
Yeah.
And by chance, it just popped up on a station. And I think the thing about the both High Low and Regretfully Yours, that I think, you know, the reason we can't find too much fault in them is that a lot of bands since then have used that sound as like their, the Elektra's bane of their existence, this sort of like post-grungy alt rock, is what like a lot of bands that you and I listen to today are kind of emulating.
Yeah.
By choice. Like this style of music has... It has like a, I don't want to say quaint, but it has like a classic feel to it. So when newer bands are just playing guitars, straight up guitars, we're like, oh, this is novel. Like there's no keyboards. It just sounds like 90s rock. But I think that maybe they didn't have that kind of a hindsight.
Yeah.
Quite at that time.
It's funny because you're right. Like the sound has totally come back around. And, you know, another band that I think was considered a one-hit wonder, like Veruca Salt, you know, I think that's like another sound that's like totally back, and people are emulating that kind of sound, and it's totally working, and people are realizing that some of those bands that were being shoved aside as like, you only had one song, actually had like a lot more influence than maybe at the time they would have ever imagined. And so Super Drag, again, like Nat a Surf, they went to do a second record. This was in 98. It was called Head Trip in Every Key.
I see.
And when you read about this record on Wikipedia or anywhere else, you might think that it's like this insane departure with orchestras and organs and sitars, and it's so unfriendly and no one on the radio wanted anything to do with it. And the story behind it is a lot like of the Proximity Effect, where Elektra was pushing back. They said, you don't have any singles here. And Superdrag pushed back on the label and basically used all the money that they were given by Elektra to make the album they wanted to make. And when you actually go and listen to it, compared to Regretfully Yours, which was super crunchy, super immediate, this is a bit more mature. But it still has that kind of sound, and it's just a little bit more subdued in moments. But it's the songs are catchy. I think it's their best record. I listen to it quite often. I find myself going back to it a lot. And it was produced by or co-produced by Jerry Finn, who did stuff for like pop punk bands. So I think people were maybe expecting just like Regretfully Yours, but with a radio friendly sheen, and they didn't get that. But it's a great record, and it is also really aged well. And I think it's crazy that that they aren't regarded as like more than just Sucked Out when you hear this at record. And I think people feel the same way about Not a Surf as well.
You don't hear their name brought up too much, but they definitely have to be an influence to more recent bands. One of the Kinsella brothers, who does the side project Owen.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Owen? He released a 7-inch on Polyvinyl's 4-track single series that has an acoustic version of I'm Expanding My Mind.
Oh, yeah. Which is and is a great, great song.
Yeah, it's funny. There are those orchestral elements to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, not being a label that's pissed off at all your rock bands, just being a listener, it's like this seems like a natural progression from.
Totally. And all those moments of like adornments and stuff, they all serve, you know, to build to melodies. Like that song, I'm Expanding My Mind, starts acoustically and kind of builds to a full band. But like when it gets there, it's like super catchy. So it's kind of crazy to think like, you know, they must have just had a thing where they like heard a piano instead of a crunchy guitar and they were like, get out of here.
We should have an episode one day about records that major labels initially rejected that ended up being huge, successful albums.
Yeah.
I think
Superdrag and Not a Surf, I think the rest of their careers we can kind of jump back and forth on, but I think they are both bands that for a long time a lot of people I knew were saying like, no, really, they have a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, I think we picked the right two bands for this topic, because if we did like little mini polls of on social media, and I think both bands popped up a bit more than any of the other suggestions we got.
Definitely.
So we can go through their sort of post one hit wonder careers. Start with Not a Surf. After they finally got the rights to publish the Proximity Effect on their own, I believe within a year or two, they had signed a contract with the indie label Barsook Records, home of like Death Cab for Cutie and John Vanderslice. And their 2004 album Let Go was released.
In the blizzard of 77, the cars were just lumps on the snow. And then later, tripping in 7-Eleven.
Oh, I think that was a good, like, this is an example of a band making the right decision for their music for the label, and then also kind of being rewarded as such, because when I wasn't aware of much about Not a Surf, this is the one that I would see around a lot. And I think being on a record label with Death Cab for Cutie, I think totally makes sense, especially early Death Cab for Cutie, when you hear this record.
Yeah, from the first song, Blizzard of 77, this is like a band that busted out of some kind of like grunge cocoon to be this like thoughtful, sincere indie pop band.
Yeah.
And you hear that immediately from the first track on that album. And this sort of like new reborn version of Not a Surf was able to garner a ton of positive press. That's probably why you saw this album around so much.
Yeah.
The reviews for it were great. It's a great story, you know, like grunge one hit wonders end up, you know, being these like indie pop standouts on this up and coming label. One song from that album that kind of got a little bit of radio play was Inside of Love, which I think also got some MTV music video play.
I think, yeah.
It's probably the second song behind Popular that someone might have heard if you just throw the name Not a Surf out there.
That makes sense. And then to pair that with like what Superdrag were doing, they released a record after their second one called In the Valley of Dying Stars. And it kind of splits the difference. Like we see Not a Surf just go fully into their sort of indie pop stuff, whereas their second record kind of split the difference between their first and third. But Superdrag got the like, we're going out there compared to our first album out of the way. And then their third album splits the difference. And it's really great. It has a great song called Give Me Animosity on it. It kind of starts their trajectory of just, you know, we're going to be the band that does the crunchy indie rock, and we got our kind of masterpiece out of us, and now we're just going to be really consistent.
In 2000, were you kind of keeping tabs on Superdrag?
No, not at all. I don't think I really fully got into Superdrag until like the late 2000s, you know. Like they'd probably already put out their final record in 2009 by the time I was starting to get into Regretfully Yours and Head Trip in Every Key. Like I remember Sucked Out, and it was one of those moments of like, oh yeah, remember that song? I'm gonna go listen to their albums now, and oh, they're great. But yeah, In the Valley of Dying Stars, it's a little bit more of a dark album, but again, like Superchunk or bands like Smoking Popes, you know, when they figured out their sound, they kind of just decided that they would consistently put out these really solid records. I think with some diminishing returns, I think Last Call for Vitriol in 2002, Industry Giants in 2009 aren't my go-to records, but they got some great songs on them.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's similar, like we keep saying, to Not a Surf. After Let Go, which Correction was released in 2002, they released kind of a string of albums that are almost kind of the same quality, maybe just a little bit below Let Go. But it's just very consistent. The diminishing returns were there. I feel like 2005's The Way is a Gift was a little bit better than 2008's Lucky, which was quite a bit better than their 2012 album. The Stars Are Indifferent to Astronomy. But the kind of where the departure is between these two bands is that Not a Surf actually still around making music. And in just last year, they released their album, You Know Who You Are, which I think is actually, it was a nice rebound compared to that sort of like, okay, we get what you're doing aspect of their career.
Yeah, I need to listen to that one.
Yeah, they're still on Barsook Records, so they've remained loyal to the people that picked them up after their Elektra nightmare. And as far as it seems like they're just going to keep releasing solid guitar pop albums.
Yeah, I need to get into that one, and I'd like to see what they do from here. And it's interesting to loop it back to Superdrag, when you're talking about like all the bands today that are taking these bands and being inspired by them, The last thing that Superdrag put out was a double LP demo compilation, and they put it out on Side One Dummy Records, which is like home to bands that probably listen to and love Superdrag. And I think Side One Dummy also, I might be wrong about this, but I do think they have some of the rights to some of their records. I think they kind of have been sheltered by Side One Dummy a little bit. And I just think that's really interesting because it's like full circle.
Yes, Side One reissued some of those records on vinyl, because I know Head Trip and Every Key, I think, was out of print for quite a while. It was pretty expensive to get a copy. And then maybe around 2012 or so, I think they started reissuing some of their other stuff. I think Regretfully Yours is still like a white whale record for a lot of people. I don't think they repressed that one.
I think that it's been a really interesting compare and contrast. It's interesting that they were both on Elektra, but I just think that story of like the hit record, you know, the troubled follow up, and then the consistency of these records that they continue to put out is like a common theme. But I do think, like I said before, these are two bands that their names are in people's heads, but I don't think they necessarily think to go check out their records and find out like how solid a lot of them are. And some of our listeners and friends on Facebook and beyond had some recommendations when we posed the question, what's a one-hit wonder band that you think didn't deserve it or had records that you loved? I'm kind of kicking myself about Cake, because I think Cake is considered a one-hit wonder band, and I think that they are so amazing and so consistent and so misunderstood. So I would throw their hat into the ring for my pick, but we had a bunch of great results.
Let's run through them. So Tim Defoe on Facebook recommended Brand Van 3000, which I actually have never heard of.
Okay, so I think that's a Canadian thing then, because they had a huge hit called Drinking in L.A. And it was a big, big hit here in Canada. You could not escape it. It was on the Much Music compilation, Big Shiny Tunes. And I think they were definitely one of those bands that's all they were really known for was that song. I think this came up a couple times, but the first one that I saw was a friend of mine, Natalia. She brought up the band Semisonic. They had a hit called Closing Time. And interestingly enough, I think I saw the name of one of the guys from Semisonic had co-written some of the songs on the latest Not a Surf record. But their album was one of those ones that I bought because of the song Closing Time, and then listened to the rest of the record and was like, yuck. No thanks.
I brought this episode prompts to my wife, and she actually did recommend Semisonic as well. So I need to listen to what
I remember being very disappointed with the record, but maybe it aged well.
Andrew Bartle recommended Presidents of the United States of America, which I think it's a
good pick.
It is, yeah. You had those big singles that were on the self-titled first album. And then their second kind of big album, which I think got a push, veered even further into like kids music, silly territory. I think it was a little too much. To still be considered like a grungy rock record.
I find them, I really like that first record, and I think that they are a lot cooler than people remember. Like the fact that their bassist and their guitarist both have these weird tunings, and their bassist has guitar strings on his bass guitar, and the guitarist has bass strings on his guitar. It's like totally like 90s alt. A couple people brought up the New Radicals, my friend Michael Newton, as well as Lauren from the Gray Estates. And I think that's a great pick. That's a song that had a really big hit, You Only Get What You Give, I think it was called, which interestingly enough, shit-talked back and called out Marilyn Manson, which was funny. He says something in that song about, like, you're in your mansions, like, come out, we'll kick your asses, but it's, like, the most cheery kind of like radio pop, and you're like, you aren't kicking anybody's asses. But a lot of people really like that record.
Greg on Facebook, is this Greg LeGros
of See You Next Wednesday?
celebrity guest response.
He's a big Faith No More fan.
I never got into Faith No More.
I have slowly gotten into Faith No More. I had never really heard their big hit Epic, but I am into their record Angel Dust quite a bit. I think that's a really cool record, but I do think that they qualify because that was a big hit, and I think people didn't know what to make of it, and then they kind of found their audience and just kind of wrote it from there.
So we also reached out on the Facebook group for the Gray Estates blog, and we got a lot of really cool responses.
I got to take this one because it's Canadian related. But Matt Latham said, it's odd for me to say Bare Naked Ladies as I absolutely love them, but One Week is often classified as a one-hit wonder. I do love them, mainly the Stephen Page era, but he decided to pick them. I think that's fair. I think especially outside of Canada, that's fair. I think in Canada, they probably had a number of hits before One Week. I think One Week, when that landed here, it was like this big, big hit, but it was also kind of like, oh, they're gross now. We don't like them anymore.
Cool. Yeah. I'm sure there's more of these out there. We want to hear which ones you recommend. You can always go on our Facebook or Twitter or Instagram.
Totally. And they don't have to just be 90s bands.
On Facebook, we are at facebook.com/surfacenoisepod. On Twitter and Instagram, our handles are at Surface Noise Pod. And
you have your own. YCKMD underscore. Say it three times fast.
Yeah, I think that
totally
concludes today's episode. Do we have something? We might have something planned already for a future episode.
I think we have some ideas. But if anyone out there has ideas for things that they would like to see covered, genres or whatever, let us know. Because we are always open for ideas.
That's right. And we've released a couple of cool episodes recently, so go check those out. Like I said, we talked with Rebecca Johnson from Netflix's Glow in a past episode. We talked with The National's Matt Berninger and Baby Dayliner on the same episode, which you'll see like on the front page of our feed. And we got more stuff coming, so make sure you subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. Leave a review if you're so inclined.
Goodbye.
Otherwise, we will see you very soon.